the conversation about optimization, rest is the most important. There's no shortcuts to health. If I had a time machine, I'd go back. And I would tell the mum of the two-year-old, go to sleep. Whatever you think you're going to do tonight to prepare for tomorrow, you'll do better tomorrow. But when you're in it, you can't really see it. I didn't do it. And I have a degree in health science. It took me 7 years to realise that I just had to put the mask on first.
Welcome to season 3 of the Let's Check In podcast, where we make sense of the messy, uncertain middle of modern life through candid conversations and expert insights. I'm your host, Susie McAvale. Let's check in. There's a certain kind of exhaustion that goes beyond being tired. It's the exhaustion of trying to keep up with work, rising costs, health advice, and the pressure to do everything properly when life feels already really full. And somewhere in that pressure, even taking care of ourselves can start to feel complicated. Katie Gett knows that space well. She's a naturopath, health educator, founder of The Staple Store, and author of The Staple Store Cookbook, Volume 1. Through her work, Katie has built a deeply engaged community around a more grounded approach to health, one that's accessible, practical, and designed for real life. This conversation is about how to take care of yourself when life feels full, expensive, and exhausting. We explore the link between food insecurity and health, the hidden cognitive load of feeding ourselves well, and why simple, nourishing food matters more than we think. Katie, it's so lovely to have you here on the Let's Check In podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Susie.
So, let's talk about your journey and how you've come to be. It's so interesting and I want everyone else to hear about it.
So I started studying naturopathy about 20 years ago. And whilst I studied, I was also working in health food shops, which I loved because you got to dispense your naturopathic knowledge to anyone that would listen. And food could really be a focus on treating everyday symptoms for people. And I worked in health food shops for a while and then I graduated and I went into private practice. And I just missed working in health food shops because I missed it so much. I missed seeing all of my customers. I missed seeing people and then coming in and saying, oh, I have a cold or I have a sniffle. And I'm like, oh, just take this or do this. And then I think the best part is that it was real time. So people would come back and tell you exactly what had happened. I had a really busy personal practice. And then I was like, if I'm going to do it, I have to do it for myself. So I opened a brick and mortar store called The Staple Store in Ripon Lee. And we had, it was just based on Whole Foods because I really wanted to show people the value of Whole Foods and what it could do for your health. So there was no supplements, there was no fancy powders, it was just food. And I come from a food background, so my dad's a fine dining chef and my mum owned catering companies growing up.
It's in your DNA.
Yeah, exactly. I was working in the health food shop and it was at the same time where this aspirational wellness bubble was really taking shape. It was when Instagram was starting to take off and the shop became quite famous. We had lines of people out the door every weekend and I was traveling around Australia finding small producers and bringing really cool products into the shop. At the same time giving lectures, which is what I love, which was teaching people about whole food and the value of whole food. There were certain terms you weren't allowed to use in the shop and one of them was superfoods because it's a marketing term and we would replace it with hero food. What was special about them is they're very accessible, both financially and physically, and suitable on almost every budget. And what makes them special is that each one of these foods has significant clinical data. Ones that people know are like turmeric and black pepper and cinnamon and oats and blueberries and strawberries and broccoli and kale and all of these things. There's hidden gems everywhere, like buckwheat, which is really cheap, and lentils and even potatoes are considered under our heading hero foods. And so I would give lectures and I thought that I wasn't in this aspirational wellness bubble. I didn't realize that my language had changed. So I started talking about, it's okay, you can make this cake recipe, just swap the white flour out for almond meal and make it more nutrient dense, swap the white sugar out for coconut sugar. And that's because it's a more of a whole sugar and it's less refined.
But it costs more, hey?
But it costs so much more. When we're talking about flour, it's $1.70. And when you're talking about almond meal, it's like $30 a kilo. And I was in the proverbial cool kids club. All of a sudden, I was never cool at high school and I was never cool in primary school. And I was all of a sudden just sitting at the cool kids table and I was inside of this Instagram wellness bubble. And I didn't realize because I was still talking about the things that were really important to me, still talking about whole foods. When I was examining what I was saying, I was like, oh, I think I'm missing the people that I want to speak to most. And I closed my brick and mortar store during lockdowns. I'm a single mom, so I had to, it was hard homeschooling with my daughter.
Oh my gosh.
And yes. Running a business. So I closed that down. And then a year or two later, I opened up online and there was a whole bunch of products that we made at the Staples store. So we made like lentil mixes to make lentils really easy for people. We made cake mixes and muesli mixes and porridge mixes. We were online and we had 8 packages that weren't picked up by the courier. And so we went around Melbourne and were delivering them. And I realized for the first time, Susie, I was going to mansions. I was going to houses that had driveways that were bigger than apartment blocks I'd ever lived in. And we were, you know, it was post lockdowns and when inflation went skyrocketing and everyone's discretionary income plateaued, I just didn't realize how wealthy our customer base was. Mm-hmm. And I got home and I was like, oh, this isn't what I came here for. This isn't what I left naturopathy for. That same day, one of my girlfriends who's a single mama, she called me and she was like, I was at your house last week and I watched you do this thing where you got a can of beans, rinsed them and got a jar of tomato pasta sauce and some spices. And then you made us all burrito bowls with leftovers from the fridge. I need you to take photos of everything that you make this week because it just makes sense. And I just hadn't thought about ever doing that. And then I was like, oh, that's what I need to do. I need to go back to really simple stuff and to go back and help the people that I came here to serve. Mm. So I shut down my business. I had 3 months worth of savings from the drop. And I was like, let's just do it. Well, let's work out how I can make a meaningful change and make it so that I can make a living from it. Mm. I started writing my Substack and I started building this naturopathy business as well. And had been speaking about food insecurity and the cost of living crisis in Melbourne particularly. And our most profitable recipe was something called Not So Dal. Over, I've made it 1,000 times and just gave it away. And meanwhile, these recipes were being contract manufactured. So they were all locked behind NDAs. And I was like, I'm just going to give it away.
Oh my gosh.
And so I just pulled over, put it up on Instagram and our followers just loved it. They were like, oh my goodness, this is so good. And I'm like, what do you want next? I'll just give you everything. What do you want? So the whole idea is you get red split lentils and a bunch of spices and seasoning. And then you just pack it away in your cupboard. And when you're ready, you just pull it out. You can pop it on a saucepan or in a rice cooker and you put a can of tomatoes and 2 cans of water and you press go on the rice cooker or you simmer it for 25 minutes and then dinner's ready. That recipe in itself costs about $2.50 to make and will serve a family of 4. And so I put this very provincial, this video I put up. I remember I was with my brother and my little girl and we were in the car eating ice cream and I was like, I'm just going to put this video up right now. And I did. And I woke up the next morning and had 10,000 new followers and Jennifer Garner had shared it.
Oh.
It's had like close to 3 million views. All of a sudden, my DMs were getting flooded with people saying, thank you for this recipe. Mm. We're experiencing food insecurity. And I was just really blown away. It was just hadn't realized people were experiencing food insecurity in places that I just had always imagined food to be secure.
This season of the Let's Check In podcast is proudly supported by Polito Group, a Melbourne-based commercial cleaning company. What connected me with Adrian and Marty, the founders of Polito Group, is that they don't just see cleaning as maintenance. They see it as caring for the environments that people spend their time in. And that aligns deeply with this podcast. Because the spaces that we work in affect how we feel, how we think, and how we show up each day. Polito Group has built its reputation on relationships, consistency, and genuine care, not just for their clients, but for the people and their team as well. They're currently offering listeners the chance to win $1,000 towards a professional commercial clean for a new retail, hospitality, or commercial space. You can find out the latest competition details via a link in the show notes, or you can go directly to @PolitoGroup on Instagram and check out their link in bio. Now, let's continue the conversation.
So what a journey. I had goosebumps when you were saying about going back to your mission and really asking yourself that hard question, what am I doing this for?
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, but to identify that and then take action,
Quite
different things. And To be commended on that is quite incredible. The interesting aspect of waking up one day and having 10,000 extra followers.
Yeah.
Now, take the superficial lens away from that. More than just being a follower, it was trying to tell you something, right?
It was like, okay, so you're on the right track. I think I have to write the book now. So I started writing the book, and the whole idea of the book was to give away all of the recipes that we had made for years. It was a way of saying thank you for all of your support for years. Let's champion food security. And instead of us selling you the products, we'll just give you the recipes. So I started writing the cookbook. People just kept messaging me about the Not So Dull because it had quite a bit of longevity. So it was reaching new audiences all the time. You know what? Let me just stop everything and make something. And I was really tongue in cheek. I think I'm going to regret this. Here's a can of beans. Here's a jar of pasta sauce. Stir it up. Dinner's ready. That changed everything. All of a sudden, I was getting all of these emails and DMs from people. Thank you for making this health food. There's people that were critically ill, that were chronically ill, people that were working with people in assisted living and social workers. And they were like, this is what we need. We need it to be this simple. I went back and I rewrote the entire cookbook in 3 months. The new focus was to reduce the cognitive load, reduce to get people from A to B if A is exhaustion and zero bandwidth to a nutritious meal and what those barriers could be. And it can be time, skill, equipment, and money. And so if we can try and break those barriers down to get someone from A to B. And yeah, so that's kind of where we got to along the way with the cookbook.
Beautiful. A lot of your work is about reducing the cognitive load around food.
Yes.
What does chronic overwhelm do to our ability to really take care of ourselves?
Oh, I think it's so noisy. Everything is so overwhelming. We have so much information coming at us. Mm. What I think is hard for the general public is to ascertain what's important anymore. And so I talk about this in my Substack a lot, which is like the 5 basic principles of health. And I think that we just need to just keep coming back to that. And one of them is a diet as close to whole food as possible and joy and movement and water and hydration and movement. When we're being told on social media that we need this powder and we need to be doing this and this, and it's all about optimization, I think sometimes the most simplest thing is to just go back to basics and stop trying to optimize.
And get those right and get them consistent.
Exactly. Like I talk about them as being like if you have a cardboard box and each one of these basic building blocks goes inside of it. And so when all the building blocks are in there, the box has integrity. So you can then add things like Wim Hof breathing and fasting and all of the other things that essentially are beneficial. But if you're putting them on top of a box that has no internal support, then it collapses in on itself. Yeah. In the same way that if it's not full and you're throwing supplements in, it is never going to be full unless you just get the basics right.
The conversation about depth of what people do, I think, is really important. It's not necessarily how much they're doing.
Yeah.
It's what they're doing and then how consistently and to what degree they're doing it.
Well, you know, when we have the conversation about optimization, rest is the most important and proper rest without our phones and without screens and without just allowing ourselves to just be. It's so integral to our health, like more integral than any superfood powder.
This is a very timely conversation for me over here. I'm sure a few other people.
I am all for biohacks. I love a biohack, but you've got to start with the basics first. There's no shortcuts to health.
What does it actually take to do this work at a level where most people never even think about it, especially in an industry that's often invisible until that moment that it fails?
Mr. Operations.
So it does take a special person to be dedicated and passionate. With our core group of cleaners that we've got and that we've built over time, they're really starting to understand that. Whenever we walk into a space, a commercial office or a house or a warehouse, we see how much time and effort people have put into their space. The pride that they're taking, we need to take that extra time to make sure that when we leave that space, it's perfect in their eyes.
So we started cleaning together.
Shopping centres,
polishing floors.
Pressure washing.
So we've been there, done that. That's why we are on site with our guys. Because if we know the level of care that we show, so they feed directly off that.
Your philosophy feels very different to aspirational wellness culture, which is what you alluded to before. Mm. In your own journey of health. Has there ever been a moment where you became more grounded in reality rather than perfection?
Motherhood, definitely number one. But also I got sick a couple of years ago. I had a strep infection and ended up in hospital with septicemia.
Oh dear.
And then that was really the big wake up call for me because I have a very strong constitution. So I've been able to push and work through and take advantage of a strong constitution for a long time. And then all of a sudden I had a constitution of pine and then all of a sudden I had the constitution of balsa wood. And so everything.
What a great analogy.
Yeah, everything I put on the balsa wood, it was like bowing every time. Every little bit of stress that I was doing when I wasn't sleeping properly or eating properly or getting enough fluid or having a couple of drinks. And when I would pile this stuff on, the balsa wood was just not working the way that the pine bench had always worked for me, where I could just throw everything I wanted on top. That was really when I understood these five pillars. There's no shortcuts. I couldn't fast my way out of it. I couldn't supplement my way out of it. I needed to rest and to drink water and to prioritize a whole food diet and things that I'd always done, but with so much more intention this time.
That mindfulness and intention, that's a really good word.
Yeah.
How many times do we sit and have dinner while we're scrolling and watching TV?
Yeah. Well, I was saying with my cousin who's postpartum at the moment, she has a one-year-old, and I just kept saying to her, you have so many opportunities during the day to give your body one of two messages. One, you're in danger, or one, you're in safety. And so when you are running around and eating, when you're skipping meals, when you're not drinking enough water and you're not resting, these are messages of danger to your nervous system. But things like resting, having a joyful conversation with someone, watching something funny on TV, going out into nature and having a settled nervous system, these send messages all over your body through the endocrine system, through your immune system. If you want to be healthy, it's one of the most important things that you need to understand is that as much as technology has evolved and the world's evolved around us, biologically, our bodies are still set to respond to signals of war and famine.
Mm.
We can signal with being nervous about a work meeting can be read by our bodies as the same signal as a tiger running around outside of our hut. And so whatever we can do and that we have control over to be able to give those messages of safety is really important.
That's an excellent point and a good reminder of where we've all come from, really.
Exactly.
Tell me.
Yes.
How, because that point about the nervous system is so accurate and it's really resonating with me at the moment to hear. How do people put into action regulating the nervous system? What are the sorts of things that they can do?
Number one, for women, eat breakfast is one of the most important things. So cortisol will start elevating at about 2 o'clock in the morning, like in an upward trajectory, and it will go up until melatonin kicks in. So that's when cortisol will start dropping. If you don't break the fast in the morning, cortisol will keep elevating because it will think that you're in a stressful situation. So the way to cut off at the chase is to eat a substantial breakfast. So this is where you probably would have heard in the zeitgeist, 30 grams of protein for breakfast.
Mm.
It's very real. Cortisol and insulin are very much buddies. And so if you're not breaking your fast first thing in the morning, if you're having coffee first, you're spiking your cortisol and it will mean that melatonin won't kick in so easily in the evening. So one of the best ways to give your nervous system a message of safety is breakfast. So that would be number one.
Yeah.
Number two would be to lie down 10 minutes every day. And this I got from my acupuncturist. Just lie down for 10 minutes anywhere. If you have an office, just be horizontal for 10 minutes and that will help give messages of safety as well.
Really hoping my workmates are listening to this right now so they understand what's going on.
And the other cue is to go to bed at the same time and to eat meals at the same time. The other one is walking. Walking will regulate your cortisol. If your cortisol is a little bit low or if it's a little bit high, it'll regulate it for you.
They're fantastic.
And joy.
And joy, right? That is a big one here.
It's a big one. I wrote a little book during lockdowns and it was called You and Me. And it was about micro connections. I had a lot of friends during that time that were really isolated, that were single, and they felt really lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to them, look, if you go for a walk and on the path you see someone and you smile and make eye contact, That's a micro connection. And your nervous system reads micro connections the same way as it does interactions with your lover or with your children and your family. So these are actually really important. And you'll feel it. You know, when you're at the supermarket and there's a little kid or a baby and you're smiling at them. So the same messages that your nervous system gets, the same biological cascade that happens from that little interaction is the same. We need to put our phones down. When we're on public transport, we need to be looking and having these micro connections with people. When you're at the shops and you're saying thank you to someone, make a conversation with them. Even if you're single and you feel isolated, there's still a lot of opportunities to find connection and to find to spark joy. And I think the reason that this is so important is because we're meant to live inside of tribes. They talk about loneliness as being as bad as smoking 30 cigarettes a day. Mm. And this is why. If our nervous systems are built to be around people, we need to, in whatever way we can, have a sense of community in our day every day. And we need to laugh. I always say, if you're having trouble regulating your nervous system, put something funny on. It's really that simple. There is a reason why there is laughing clinics and studies about laughing all over the world, treatment of chronic disease. And it's because joy and laughter can make you feel so much better. It has such an impact, not only on your nervous system, but also your immune system and your metabolic system as well.
I have to say, this is extremely refreshing to hear this. I think it could get really complicated sometimes and it doesn't need to be.
Exactly. There's a reason why when you look at the Blue Zones theory, it's the areas in the world that have the highest rate of octarians.
Which is longevity?
Yeah. They're curious as to why these people are living so long. The beauty of it is one of the standouts is community. Isolation and loneliness is really detrimental to your health. The aspirational wellness industry, its key purpose is for it to be out of reach to most people. Health is a right that everyone should have. There's just such simple ways that we can restore our health.
I actually often talk about simple foods with a lot of dignity and respect, don't you? And consciously using those words. What do you think people overlook about those everyday meals that quietly sustain us?
I recall this question that someone asked me and they said, is a rotisserie chicken healthy? And I was like, oh, that's a relative question. So relative yes and relatively no. So if you're talking about a rotisserie chicken being healthy to someone that eats highly processed chicken nuggets, then yes, it's healthy. But if you're talking to someone who's just bought a chicken from the farmer's market, then the answer is no. And I have always erred on the side of no. And then I realized that that's because I was speaking to such a small section of the population. And now that I'm speaking to a lot of people that have never been at that table, then simple meals with dignity become a really different conversation. I think that health food is available to everyone. We just need to change our language so we're not excluding people.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We were having a conversation as you were coming in and you were talking about that lens of privilege and the stats of intersectionality. Be really interested to hear you unpack that a little for our listeners.
So last year, by virtue of trying to stretch a tiny budget that was meant to last me 3 months with a 12-month project, it wasn't until I think it was October last year I was listening to Jess Hill on the radio and she was talking about poverty stats for single mothers. I'm a single mother myself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I wonder what it is. Because she said it was something around 60% of single mother-led households live below the poverty line in Australia. Like, what is this poverty line? And I looked it up and we've been living under this poverty line. I knew the budget was like very thin, but I think what I realized for the first time was my privilege of knowing how to cook. We grew up, we're a family of five on a single income. Mm-hmm. And so I watched my mum do it. So it was second nature to me. I didn't even think about it. I remember putting up this box of green beans that I'd bought from the Preston markets for $5. I got a 5 kilo one. And what I did with it and how I froze them and what I turned them into. And that's my privilege. Whilst living under the poverty line, I didn't feel the discomfort because I could keep our food budget quite small. And when I started looking at that, I would see the ultra-processed chicken nuggets and they were $10 a kilo. Oh, I get it now. For years, I've said, just buy your fruit and vegetables from the farmer's markets when they're in season and they'll be the same price as the supermarket. But who I wasn't talking to were the people that were, oh, we're just going to skip a meal today because we have rent due tomorrow. I was speaking to the people that could afford to make these decisions, it was then that I was, okay, how do we return health sovereignty to this group of people? Because it's been taken away and it's so many barriers to entry and have made people feel as though wellness is something that you purchase and that longevity is for those that can afford it. And it's simply not true, particularly in the wellness industry. We've come so far from that message. So talking about food insecurity and looking at the different stats, because at the moment this year with the fuel crisis, there's a lot of talk about it. So on the news and on the TV all the time, there's a lot of conversations about one in three Australians experience food insecurity and how those numbers are rising. What I found really interesting is when I looked at food insecurity stats and poverty stats for single mother-led households, I ran into the fact that this poverty line seems to be based on averages and medians across Australia. And I was like, what about me? Like, I live in a Melbourne, so my daughter can be close to her father and to her school. And my rent is exorbitant. And the poverty line is matched against people that are living in rural Australia. As someone who, I'm Eurasian, but the world identifies me as a white privileged woman. If I'm feeling left out by these stats, what if you had a disability? What if English was your second language? What if you were in a violent relationship? There's so many different intersections where when we have these conversations, like in an International Women's Day, when we talk about the wage gap and it being 18 cents. Yeah, it's 18 cents if you're a white privileged woman, but if you're a person of color with a disability, the wage gap is so far from 18 cents. And the more that this conversation becomes part of the cultural zeitgeist, we need to make sure that there's conversations that aren't leaving people out. Mm. When I thought, oh my goodness, I feel unseen by these stats. As someone who's identified as white and privileged, I can't understand what it would feel like to people in these marginalized communities going, cool, it's one in three Australia-wide, but in my community, it's one in two. That's what's been the constant theme for the last year for me is I thought that I was speaking to everyone and I wasn't. Living below the poverty line really opened my eyes to a lot of things that I just never understood as a naturopath. It's been really eye-opening, but it's been really heart-opening, I think.
Yeah.
To just be like, so these are the people that we get to talk to now. It felt almost political as a naturopath to put white sugar and white flour in.
So how do you balance the nutritional side when...
Because I'm not talking to people that are buying chickens from the farmers markets anymore.
Mm.
I'm talking to people that have $5 to make a birthday cake. If I keep talking about swapping things over, then I miss talking to people that I came here to talk to in the beginning. Mm. Having the opportunity to come on podcasts like this and talk about it and just say, please, when you're talking about these things, make sure that you're putting your intersectional glasses on so that these people can feel seen as well.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's certainly a message I think that we all need a bit of a reminder of. As a single mum, a founder and a health educator, when is caring for yourself harder than caring for everyone else?
Making this cookbook, definitely. It was a really long journey to get to. When I left, my daughter was 14 months old. And at the age of two, I was writing my first book and running a brick and mortar business. And I had majority custody of her. I didn't give to myself.
Mm.
And it wasn't until she was about seven where she became a little bit more, less dependent on me. And she was at school. And then I started looking after myself again. If I had a time machine, I'd go back. And I would tell the mom of the single mom of the two-year-old, go to sleep. Whatever you think you're going to do tonight to prepare for tomorrow, you'll do better tomorrow. I was staying with my cousin who's postpartum. And I said, before I left, can I just say one thing? You're not eating enough. And she said, but I do. And I said, no, you don't. And she said, but all I do is cook and prepare food. And I'm like, for your son, but not for you. You didn't eat breakfast today and you didn't eat a proper lunch. She's like, oh my goodness, I didn't even realize. If I had a time machine, I would go back and I would say it would have been easier if I had eaten. And it would have been easier if I'd gone to bed when she went to bed. And it would have been easier if I had just taken some time to rest. But when you're in it, you can't really see it. And I think that's really hard. But now I do. My daughter goes to bed at 8:30. I go to bed with her now. I don't even think about it. I don't do anything until I've eaten breakfast. I don't make her breakfast until my breakfast is made. You have to carve it in, but it's always easier to see these things in hindsight than it is in real time. So anyone that's listening and feeling like, oh, I really need to be doing that, I didn't do it. And I have a degree in health science. It took me 7 years to realize that I just had to put the mask on first.
That's a really powerful point. Katie, this is a question that I ask everybody who sits in this chair. What are you feeling uncertain about at the moment, and how are you best supporting yourself?
This is really front of mind.
Yeah.
Is I'm really scared about being in small business right now.
Mm.
It feels so unpredictable, and I feel like we've already been through so much in Melbourne in Australia, but particularly Melbourne, in small business for like the last 5 years. And the book has legs and it's really, really exciting. I wrote a letter to myself in February for my birthday on Substack, and I was really in the dumps. I was like, I just don't know. I think I've made this horrible mistake. We crowdfunded the cookbook, which was phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
We raised $70,000 to get it to print. And then, but in February, because all of my audience had supported it, there was no one to buy the book. And so I was like, I think I've made a huge mistake. And I had set this letter to Substack to be released on my birthday, and I completely forgot about it.
Oh,
and it was my birthday 2 days ago. And in the last week, I've been on TV twice. I've got a podcast every single day this week and radio every day this week. I just went to the post office with all of the books, all the orders I'd packaged up, and I just was going back to my car and more and more and more. And it was amazing. And so what I read to myself in that letter was, right now I'm in the pits and I am really unsure of all of the life choices I've made. I'm not where I thought I would be, but this is what's beautiful about my life. And when I was writing at this batch of Substacks, my daughter was really sick and I was sitting down with her on a mattress on the floor because she needed to be close to me. And I was just working next to her and I was like, what an amazing privilege this is. So I think that when you're deep in thinking that you've made the wrong decision or that things aren't working out, start with gratitude, because things shift so quickly. If you have the lens of looking for the miracles in your life and the joy and the happiness, you'll see the opportunities and everything can change really quickly. It was really awesome to read that letter. I was, oh my goodness, it's everything has changed and on a coin really, really quickly. But I didn't think it was going to be like that when I was writing to myself, and it was like maybe 8 or 9 weeks ago.
Wow. Yeah. I love that you had that idea of writing it.
Yeah.
What a brilliant idea.
It was really fun. At my birthday party every year, I always get everyone to tell me what they're going to do by my next birthday.
Oh my God, this is sensational. I'm adopting this.
It's really fun because then I just make them accountable for it for the next year, because you can always like make these goals, and May, I feels like a good time to do it. And then
yes,
you have a full year to do it. So yeah, you tell me what you want to achieve by the next year and then I just check in on you. And then at my birthday the next year, we're like, what did you do? Did you get it done? And how close are you doing it? And is there anything we can do to help you get there?
I think that's really beautiful. You sound like a gorgeous mum and friend. So thanks for sharing. If today's conversation resonated, you can learn more about Katie's work and the Staple Store via her social channels at the Staple Store or at Katie_get. While you're there, be sure to check out Katie's book, The Staple Store Cookbook Volume 1. To access the very generous offer that Katie is giving listeners of $10 off the digital version, you can use the code Let's Check In. Thank you so much for joining me on the Let's Check In podcast. It has been such a pleasure having you here.
Thanks, Susie. It's been really wonderful.
What this conversation reminds us of is that healthy living can become really hard when life is already stretched. Katie speaks so clearly about the pressure people are under, rising costs, food insecurity, decision fatigue, and the amount of health advice that can make even the basics feel confusing. But what stayed with me is how much she brings it back to real life. Not the perfect meal, not the expensive supplements, not another rule to follow. Just food that helps, rest that actually counts, water, breakfast, and a meal made from what's already in the cupboard. A small moment of connection that reminds your body that it's safe. And maybe that's the real shift here. The care doesn't need to look impressive to be meaningful. Sometimes the most supportive thing that we can do is to lower the barrier, remove the shame, and make looking after ourselves feel possible again. Thanks for checking in with me today. If you haven't already, hit follow or subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if this conversation resonated, share it with someone that you'd like to check in on. You'll find guest details, resources, and the link to the Let's Check In newsletter in the show notes. You can also follow along on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Let's Check In Podcast.
Before you go, a gentle reminder. This podcast is not a licensed mental health service, and it is not a substitute for professional advice. If something has come up for you, please reach out for support. In Australia, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14.